Podcasting 2.0 for October 23rd, 2020, Episode 8, or should I say Chapter 8? Oh, yeah. That's how I feel on a Friday. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Podcasting 2.0, where we are retooling podcasting as a platform of value after we preserve it as a platform of free speech. And now, the man who parses XML faster than JSON, the dev from the deep south, ladies and gentlemen, Dave Jones.
What's up? What's up this week?
What's up? No, you got to have a better line when you start, man.
No, I got nothing. I mean, like, I'm just pounding a keyboard. I got nothing.
Pounding the keyboard. I got to remember that one. That's a great one for an opening.
Pounding the keyboard.
I'm Adam Curry. It's Dave Jones you're hearing, for those who have never heard the show before.
Nothing going on this week. Slow week, right?
Slow week. Nothing to see here at all. This is where podcasting 2.0 is germinating as we try to make something out of something, I guess.
I heard you on the Buzzcast show.
You know, I did the Buzzcast show.
Yeah, it was great.
Oh, you heard? Oh, it's already out. I didn't know it was out already. Oh, okay, cool.
It dropped last night.
Oh, yeah, baby. I felt sometimes, my problem is, I'll be looking at, because I did, what is the name of that program? It's some kind of thing that's made for podcasting. It's kind of like what we use, Clean Feed, only they have a video element. And so I'm seeing four guys, and they're just looking at me, so I'm just talking. Sometimes I get the feeling, it's like, someone's got to jump in and shut me up, because I don't even know what I'm talking about now.
You've diverted three steps away. You're like, you're six levels away from where you started from.
Yeah, I hope I answered all the questions. But I did learn a lot about them. I like these guys a lot.
They just seem like cool guys. I mean, like guys you'd want to have a beer with.
Exactly. And they started Buzzsprout as a hosting service. I haven't looked at their pricing plans, but I think they mentioned $12 up to $24 a month. But what they really do is a lot of the education to really help people podcast and make it simple and make it understandable. And I've gotten quite an insight to the hosting guys, if I can just put it that way. It's another one of those things I've never really had to worry about. Yeah. Cause bandwidth, the initial test for, did I ever tell you that story about the initial test for podcasting, 15, 16 years ago?
Like where the bandwidth was coming from?
Yeah. Yeah. And
you said that Apple, it was like on Apple Drive.
Exactly. I think they called it the Mac Drive at the time. And it was a little bit, early cloud storage service from Apple. And so we're talking 2004, something like that, 2005, 2004, probably. I don't remember. I'm bad at dates.
Yeah.
I was putting all this stuff up there on this drive. I don't know. Maybe there was, back in the day, maybe 100 megabytes was the limit. But there was really nobody was using this to serve files from, per se, the way we were doing it. And I heard later, when I had my my meeting with Steve, or maybe after that with some of the team, that they'd noticed this. They'd noticed all this bandwidth. And apparently it was Steve that said, just let them go. Just give them whatever they need. Let's see what they do.
That's like, if you listen to those initial Daily Source Code episodes, they're real short. And
how long are they? 10 minutes, 15 minutes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's that. Wow. And like, how big of a file was that? Maybe 10 megs?
No, and it would take an hour to upload.
Yeah, yeah.
At least. It's crazy. Yeah,
when we first started, I think people who have come into just the computer technology industry in general within the last really 10 years, you have no concept of how bad and how hard it was to get decent bandwidth a long time ago. Like if you go, one of my first jobs in IT was a sysadmin at a insurance brokerage. And we had big multi-state brokerage with lots of branch offices and that kind of thing. And so we had leased lines between every office. Mm-hmm. And these were like, 64K ISDN.
Woo! Yeah. Big bandwidth.
Yeah, I mean, it was back just enough to carry. It was basically just enough to carry like a terminal session for an IBM mainframe,
right?
Yeah, and like, there was none of this like, oh, just go out and download the latest copy of such and such. I mean, that just you got shipped. If you needed anything more than, you know, like 50 megabytes.
Oh, yeah. You got it on a drive, baby.
There was a disk.
A disk, right.
Exactly. You got CDs. In the mail. But I mean, like, and it made everything complicated. I mean, I remember when so here's one failed technology. The list of failed internet technologies is also a great topic. Another failed technology that I've seen in my career is point-to-point wireless internet.
Oh, yeah. So, sure.
Yeah. We had an office here in downtown Birmingham, and then we had our bandwidth was so bad through our ISP, and all we had a dual ISDN line, so 128K. And then these guys came in and said, we can like double that. And so there's a skyscraper here in town, and they're like, we have a microwave dish on the top of the skyscraper, and we just aim it at your building. And so it was like, and it was just as no more expensive than what we were paying. So like, yeah, let's do that. And
did it work?
No, it was horrible. Yeah. They like it would every time, you know, it'd be rain or, you know, lightning or something like that.
Oh, right. It would disconnect. Yeah. Right. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But they were selling that hard here for a while. And but anyway, this is just if you haven't been in the IT or technology world for more than 10 years, I mean, you really just have no understanding of what it was like.
Right. Well, we're in an interesting age group. We grew up with telephones connected to the wall and televisions with an over-the-air reception antenna. You know, that's flip-flopped.
Yes, it totally has.
It's become exactly the opposite. So go figure.
Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking about this the other day, too, is how much computer stuff has changed just in general. Like my first computer ever was a Commodore 64.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when you boot it up, it was almost instantaneous boot, but when you boot it up, it was what you landed in was a basic interpreter.
Right.
And so you're programming. That was your
command line was basic. You were in basic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And you could just start typing basic commands. I mean, you flip the switch, it comes on within a second and a half.
Yeah.
And you're typing basic commands.
Wait, your television has to flicker first 3 times.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I had the Sinclair ZX80 was my first computer before the VIC-20, which was the precursor to the Commodore 64. And Sinclair ZX80, you got to look it up. It basically was a piece of plastic and had a plastic overlay keyboard built into this thing. It's just a small unit with a TV modulator in the back, and you could hook up a cassette recorder. But what was funny about it, because, you know, it didn't have real keys, just those plastic things you press down.
So I'm looking at it. It looks like there's like it's real thin.
Very thin. Yeah, very thin. That was Clive Sinclair made it, actually, who went on to make many famous inventions. But the problem was every single time you press the key, the screen would flicker. So if you were typing, we flicker, 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 flicker. Oh, my God. But back in the day, when BBC came out with their computer, which is around the same time, I think this was still pre-Commodore 64, and forget the name of the BBC computer, they would broadcast programs. So they'd be like, okay, get your cassette decks ready, and you press play and record, and then they would go, and they'd send this, a minute or 2 minutes, and it would be an entire program, and you'd have it on, which was a great distribution method if you think about it.
That is weird, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It was actually cool because we could get BBC on over the air where I lived in the Netherlands. And that's how they distributed their programs. They have an hour long program. Was it the Spectrum? Oh, it was BBC Spectrum, I think. BBC. Let me just see. Home computer. I want to get it right because people are probably yelling at their podcast.
Yeah.
Acorn. The Acorn. The BBC Micro. I think it was based on Acorn.
Acorn. Now, Acorn is, they used to be the parent company, or maybe still are, of the ARM chip, right?
No, I don't know.
Do I have that wrong?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Okay.
Acorn.
Acorn arm. I may have that completely wrong. Yeah, I don't know. But that, like, the BBC, like, the British broadcast, or it really the European broadcast stuff in general, has always seemed to be ahead of the game for the, you know, U.S. stuff.
With technology, always ahead of the game. With content, decades behind.
Yeah, yeah.
Decades. Because it was all government money. So there are a lot, I mean, I worked in, when I first started in radio and television, the legal radio and television in the Netherlands, and this is 84, we were already doing satellite broadcast on Europa television all over Europe. The facilities they had, I mean, I did television when you had 8 cameras, 4 people in the makeup room, you'd rehearse for a full day, a day before the actual recording, you know, there was money. We had money back in the day, but also that, I mean, I remember the first digital effects coming in. Quantel, you had that starburst effect, which everybody was doing for a year.
Is that, how did they do this stuff, like that was lower thirds and all that?
Oh, before that, literally you had a caption camera. So in the edit suite, or if it was live, it would be a separate little table. And there's a camera focused on the table, and the art department would make these black cards with the art on it, and you'd align it right underneath the camera, and then they'd just wipe it in, lower third. They'd literally wipe in a lower third, and it would be a live camera. If you put your hand under it, you'd see the hand on the screen over the title.
like the weather report. You
know? Exactly. Yeah. And these are the days when we had this. We just had blue screen. It's green screen now, but I'm so old, we use blue screen for chroma key.
Why the switch? I've always wondered why was there a switch from blue to green? Is it just better?
Yeah, there's so much. You know, I don't have a technical answer for it, but for sure, blue was too close to black. There's a lot of blue in blacks. That just makes keying a lot easier. It was a choice, I guess, but there may be a technical reason. I'm sure someone out there knows.
Well, if you need help staying on topic in podcasts, I'm not your guy.
No, that's okay.
I've drugged you.
I have a feeling people don't mind hearing a little bit of our history and our banter.
Yeah.
So I've been listening to a lot of different podcasts, because podcast movement is still underway. So lots of people are congregating virtually this year. And it's been very interesting to learn a lot more about the hosting side of the business.
Tell us what you're learning.
Here's what I'm learning, Rolf. I didn't realize how much, not all, but many of the hosting companies are involved in advertising or want to be involved in advertising or have some degree, some level of advertising. And it kind of explains to me, I mean, everything I hear, and maybe it's just me, but everything I hear, no matter what it is, to me, all comes back to making money.
Yeah.
And it's the same for tags, really, for the tags that we're discussing in the namespace. A lot of it seems to be, well, if I could know, this was an interesting discussion. It was with, I think this was James Cridland on podcastindex.social. James runs Pod News. And it's about the referring URLs, which is current because you just, I think, posted some kind of fix. And what he wanted to know, or what he was saying was, you know, the referring URLs that we're getting from, in general, it's a problem because you really don't know if it's coming from which app it's coming. If it's PodFriend, there seems to be some extra issues because that'll show up as a Mozilla browser, which of course it really is. And I'm sitting there thinking, does anyone really care? And I've never thought about it that way. That, again, that comes from my background in radio, where you never have to think about the radio. I'm thinking about the person connected to it, which is old fashioned thinking, I realize. But as I was probing a little further, you know, when someone says, well, you want to know where to spend your marketing dollars, as someone who's spent no dollars ever on marketing any of my podcasts ever, I got into the conversation with James, and I didn't know that that there are podcast apps that already have existing relationships with podcasts, maybe featuring them, maybe highlighting them. This is a lot of stuff I just didn't know. So there seems to be more ecosystem or more out there than I realized, but it seems really inefficient. I'm not against advertising. I don't want it. I don't need it. For me, advertising is censorship. But I do want to make sure we deliver what will help people, no matter how they want to run their show, their podcast, their host, their app, whatsoever. It's just, if we can get it all out on the table, is it about making money? Because then maybe there's more things we can do without, feels like it's dirty or something. It's like one of these, like no one wants to touch it, maybe because of the nature of podcast index. But I just want to make sure that we're fulfilling the need that people have.
Yeah, there's an interesting stat that I saw on Twitter the other day, and I wish I remembered where it came from, because I think it was just a poll that was done by a hosting company, but I don't remember. If somebody knows, that y'all can tell me. But it basically broke down. It was just a simple question: why do you podcast?
Mm-hmm.
And they had a few different answers. And by far the biggest one, it was like almost 50% of the responses said, just because it's fun, or just because I want to.
Mm-hmm.
Like there, I think there is obviously a big, funding, ad monetization issue within the space, because it is a media at this point. But there's also a large percentage of people who really don't care. And there are going to always be, and I think that's what makes this medium unique, is like, if you go out and try to set up your own radio transmitter in your neighborhood, you're going to get a knock on the door, from the FCC. It's not something you can do. And whereas a lot of people probably would want to, do that, because there's just something powerful and fun about getting to broadcast yourself to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all that sort of, I wouldn't say it pent up, desire to do that, but there evidently has always been this desire amongst people to put themselves out there in the medium of audio, and podcasting allowed that to happen in a way that was cheap enough to be accessible to people. And so even though there's no monetization, even though there is monetization that is a big concern, there's also 50%, that's a lot of people who they really don't care if they ever make a dime off their podcast. I see people like on the Reddit podcasting thread, or subreddit, whatever you call it. I see people on there. Somehow I got on the freaking Reddit mailing list for this thing. But so I get these things all the time, and there's people on there dropping hundreds or thousands of dollars on setups for their podcast studio in their basement.
Yeah.
And they have like 10 listeners. And that tells me that it's a hobby.
Yeah, it's almost like the ham radio.
I was about to say the same thing. I was about to say amateur radio.
Yeah. Amateur radio. Exactly. I know guys who spend $100,000 on their antenna alone.
Yeah.
Not even the gear. Well, and this is really important. Thank you to, Blueberry, who now are not only auto-submitting, or I think they've been auto-submitting to us for a while. So if you're a Blueberry customer and you create a new podcast, they take care of most, the way I understand it, they take care of most of all the feed submissions for you.
They give you a dashboard where you can pick and choose where you want to submit. And I'm thinking that most people just go and go, boop, 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 and just do them all.
Do them all, sure.
Yeah.
It would be great for exactly that kind of person who was going through that process of just, hey, I want to do a podcast. And I use the example of a professor with his lectures because I like it, because I think it's valid, but also it's time sensitive. And what we're solving is the idea that you have to wait for Apple to approve your podcast before it starts to trickle down into everything else. It would be nice if there could be a list of podcasts that support the index, podcast apps that support the index, or at least say, hey, if you want your friends to be able to get it right away, here's a number of apps that will be carrying your podcast the minute you hit submit, or within 15 minutes or whatever it is for us to pick it up. And, you know, then in 3 days or 4 days, you'll be available on the other apps and other platforms. Is that immediate, you know, the idea that you can get everything up and running, just like amateur radio, key up the mic, and you got a signal. It's so disappointing. And I think it's a barrier to entry when people say, oh, I got to wait.
You submitted a bunch of podcasts to Apple. What's the typical turnaround on that?
It's not fair to say for me, because I've had stuff that even got rejected, and I sent an email and said, what? And they said, yeah, we'll figure it out. Done. That's because of people I know. I think it's at minimum 2 days. I really don't know. I haven't submitted that many recently.
That is a disheartening thing.
It kind of sucks. And it makes you feel like, and you sit, just like, one of the devs on Podcast Index, .social was saying, the podcast guru.
Yeah.
Says, you know, and he submitted his app to the Google Play Store, and it's taking a long time, longer than usual. That's horrible. What a shit experience. You know, so frustrating.
Yeah, Apple has gotten a lot better from my understanding. They're usually pretty quick, and now Google's gotten worse. Mm. And you don't even know, like, you're like, what's the holdup? Like, you don't have any guidance as to you. Right. It's just really, you're just kind of throwing it out there into the void, and you just wait. You know, it's like a.
Although I disagree with it, I have a feeling they're going to have to break that up. I think the government's going to step in. I personally don't agree with it. I don't like how it's turned out, but I think they have every right to do whatever the hell they want. But as with lots of things in America, when you get too successful, you know, we have an oligarchy. You know, we have basically two players in the App Store arena, and it's just not enough. So antitrust laws do come into play when you get this big. So they're kind of a victim of their own success.
And it's one of those things where if you break up one, you have to break up the other.
Of course.
Because you could the one that's more concerning to me, even that, like, not from a podcasting perspective necessarily, but the Google is clearly the one that is the most difficult, the biggest target, like, logically speaking. But,
really?
You know, because they just have a track record of actual anti-competitive harm.
Right.
You know, they Sherlock other things all the time and bake it into search.
Right.
They essentially kneecapped Yelp and all these other review sites, and
yeah.
There's been some very good articles that have come out about the actual, like, stuff you never hear about, little mom and pop shops that got destroyed by a Google, you know, change, and they were clearly targeted for that to happen.
Right.
But you know, if you can't. From just a behemoth standpoint, if you're going to look at antitrust and if you're going to start breaking those up, I think Apple, even though they're not really as much of a target, they're going to get brought in anyway, just by association.
And to bring this around to where we started, we really need to have technology history being taught in schools. Hmm. We are in this place because there's an entire generation that's grown up that only knows what they've seen. So Facebook and Twitter and Instagram is the internet.
Yeah.
And have no idea that, oh, you know, you can do all kinds of other things. The Mastodon server that we are using is a godsend. I cannot say it enough how great this has been for our little development community of 100, 150 people. And we were running on nine euros a month. It's a guy in Denmark, Hugo, who runs Mastodon.host. And I know, you know, running noagendasocial.com, it takes quite a bit of resources to run one of these, particularly if you're federated, and search is a big deal. We didn't have search enabled. Of course, we needed that. And I went over and $39, boom. Okay. So it's definitely more expensive, but man, now we can search everything and it functions so well. It's so much better than a message board. It kicks a mailing list ass by 1,000.
Oh God, yes.
Developer mailing list. That's like back to the days of Usenet. Just want to go shoot yourself. Pulling on a Leonard Cohen record, baby. I'm hopping in the bathtub with a toaster. It's another email list.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, the search is huge.
So to
that was a big deal.
So to kind of get us into some of the tags, I want to talk about chapters. Oh, yeah. Because that's been chapters is something that's been discussed quite a bit, which has been, I would say, jerry-rigged in different ways. Just from my perspective, I don't like chapters.
Okay.
And the reason why I don't like chapters is because the product that I make, I want people to hear the whole thing in context. I don't want them jumping around. I understand in hindsight, it's really great if you want to go find something, which is why I'm tickled pink about transcripts. I love transcripts. We've been using transcripts at No Agenda Player, but also noagendashow.com now, although they stopped temporarily. But you could go and you could say, I'm looking for something you were talking about. You type in a few keywords, it goes to the transcript, and right there is a play button, and you can play and share and tweet and do all that stuff right from there. Love that. What's really lacking for me is tools to create this. I have no idea where to go. And I like the idea of putting markers in after the fact, or even as I think CSB mentioned, having that crowdsourced, which has its own issues with spam and crap. But in general, it works out pretty well, unless you ask people to register to do it, then no one does it. Yeah. And I'd really like to be able to use the No Agenda Show podcast for all of these new tags, and you know, because we have a pretty wide reach across a whole bunch of different apps and players. So adding all these features in, this is a really good place for me to try it and to be able to talk about it here on this podcast. Mm-hmm. So just from my perspective, I'm not all jacked about chapters where people can just jump around. And I do it myself. I go to a good example is ATP, Marco's podcast. And I'll just look at the chapters and I'm like, nah, not interested. Because, you know, it depends on how it's worded or whatever is said. I'm like, it doesn't seem like an interesting show. And I know I'm selling myself short.
I wonder if, because chapters, see, I'm exactly the opposite. Chapters excite me a lot. And it's really not
you for need to get out of the house more is what I'd say.
babe, let me tell you about chapters.
Baby, it's chapter 2 tonight, darling.
I'm going to tell you all about the JSON spec for chapters. Nothing gets an evening started like that. But, it's not the ability to jump and skip, because I rarely ever do that. There's two podcasts I listen to, ATP and Dr. Peter Attia has a podcast called The Drive. So I listen to the, not very often, but I do listen to it sometimes. They both have chapters, which is rare in podcasts because it's the tools required to bake that into an MP3 are not accessible to most average people. So they're rare. So when you see one, you notice it. But I never used the skip. Like I listened all the mid sort of ad reads and that kind of thing in ATP. I listened to all those. I just listened straight.
So through. What do you use the chapter markers for then?
So the idea of that gets me jazzed about the chapter markers is not the skipping, but the ability to add rich content into those specific points. So like ATP is a good example. Sometimes they will bake in a different piece of show art at a certain chapter marker. I don't know if you've ever noticed that.
No.
Okay. So if you're looking, sometimes they'll be talking about something like this, something that's visually difficult to describe, and they'll actually put a screenshot that'll take the place of temporarily of the cover art of the album art. And then once that chapter goes away, the album art comes back and you can visually see it's just a cool idea. If you had this, okay, and this is what I would like for the chapter spec to be, and that's why I've been kind of pushing hard for it to be an external JSON format, is that if you have an external file where you can define rich content within chapters, you can have the podcast apps give them the ability to pull in that data at the right moment. And you can essentially turn a podcast into like a PowerPoint presentation almost. It's you can say, you know, at a certain point, and I see that you can see this already in HyperCatcher. And I've been using HyperCatcher more the last week on my iPhone. You can see what happens, like in the Buzzcast podcast. It has transcripts, and they're popping up. And the way David Norman chooses in within HyperCatcher to display that is he displays them as like almost like cards.
Right, I saw that.
Shift from chapter to chapter at the key time. So you could really have like one of those cards could be an iframe with HTML content in it, or it could be for another. And this kind of alludes to something that I want to talk about later when we do some clips, but one of them could be like a poll. You take a poll, interactive content, and it comes up at the moment that it is appropriate for within the audio. And like, if you define a decent, you know, file format in that way, there's really no limit as to what you can put in there. And it's just up to the podcast app to support that type of media.
So I like what you're saying. And again, it all comes down to tools. I am not a post-processing guy. I don't believe in it. I don't like it. That's just me. Having the tools, see, I do three and a half hours. I'm done. I have another 20 to 30 minutes of post-production to get, you know, to bake the MP3, to put all the information into the MP3, get the show notes up and running. I'm just focusing on not screwing it up, which still happens way too often. What I like about what you're saying is if you really made it, I think it's great as an interactive, a touch point for interactivity with the listener, who I consider to be producers. I think that is the model. I think successful podcasts, most of them see that how you involve your audience is what really what keeps them sticking. So I would love to be able to post a show and then have the audience, as they're listening, create markers, find whatever is appropriate, and whether that goes through an approval process or not is not even that important. That's easy. That's an easy fix. But at least have that first run through be determined by the people themselves, and then have that available, which I think is possible with podcastindex.org, to have that available for the next person. We're doing different things. I HyperCatcher caught me off guard, pun intended. I couldn't figure out where my subscriptions were. I click on subscriptions, but all I see is episodes, and it took me a cycle to understand that it's not the inbox format, the typical here's this podcast, go in there, you see all the ones for that particular podcast. No, it's just here's the ones you've listened to, here's the ones you haven't listened to, here's the ones that are new, and it's at the episode level. Very different from any other podcast app I've used. And once I had figured it out, my brain was so trained, I really, really enjoyed it. So I think that these types of new experiences are what we're talking about, and not just all one way. Mm-hmm. I think it would be great. Is there a way technically that you could have that interactivity happen where it's happening in the podcast app, the audience is setting markers? You know, if I say, oh, you got to see this picture of so-and-so. I want someone, you know, I need producers to do that. For most people, this is not a full-time job. Even though it's my full-time job, I can't really get to it. I'd love for the audience to be able to do that. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah. Well, see, that fits in with this idea I've had for a long time, and I'm sure it's not unique, but it would be very easy to essentially destroy with the correct app, and I'm not advocating this, but with the correct podcast app, it would be very simple to destroy the podcast advertising market within, I mean, like overnight.
Oh.
And the way you conceptually simple, obviously, is technically, you know, a challenge. But so you have a podcast app that is like Waze for mapping, mm-hmm. where it's crowdsourced. And so as you're listening to a podcast, you hit an ad read or something you want to skip, you just tap. and then you tap at the end of it.
Right.
And it sends that start and end point back to the API that's in control. And then everyone else in the world who listens to that podcast, that episode on that same app, now has the option, if they could just toggle on a setting in their app that says skip all ads. And if anybody anywhere in the world has marked an ad, it just skips it.
Doesn't something like this exist already?
Not that I'm aware of.
Hmm.
I'm not sure, but just like if, you know, and it could be crowd validated where, you know, it's not just one person that affects the chapter marker. It's, you know, it has to be at least a minimum percentage of people.
Right. Well, I can see why people wouldn't want that.
Yeah. So, you know, but just like with Google's Waze app, as you're driving through the city and five people, you know, in the way the app shows, you know, a whole bunch of people are slowing down at this intersection because there must be something wrong, and everybody else gets that same data and says, okay, go. There's a lot of challenges technically to doing it, but the crowdsourcing of sort of point in time markers within a podcast seems very doable. The validation piece is obviously where the challenge is, but like, yeah, I guess that's a different type of deal. I mean, within our, you know, framework, I think it's possible we could figure out some way to support crowdfunded chapters. And I don't ever envision a podcast app that does what I was just talking about just a second ago, because why would you want that? But you know, that it doesn't,
it's the same function. It's really the same function though. It doesn't make any difference. You just need an editorial step to say, well, I don't want people skipping my ads, so I don't want that marker to come through.
But I like that. I mean, the chapter stuff to me is less about the skipping and more about the ability to just specify point in time markers for things to happen.
So before we go any further, at what point are we at the index done with preserving it as a platform for free speech? I don't think we've quite closed the loop yet.
No.
And before we go down a whole bunch of roads, I want to make sure everybody is focused on finalizing the steps that, because, you know, we're going really deep into a lot of different things. I can see the conversation threads, and they're all super interesting, but they're all much more forward-looking, even though it's stuff that people have wanted for a decade. What do we still need to complete? I mean, are we done with images, which also really is almost out of scope, but it turns out it's very necessary. I see a lot of cores, cross-scripting issues still out there. Are we focusing on the right things?
I wrote some extra content for the namespace document on the GitHub repo, and to try to clarify a little bit, some of the confusion about the timing is definitely my fault, because I have an idea in my head of how things, the way I work is just so baked into my head that I don't always clearly articulate it. And so the way that this process will work with the namespace is throw everything. We're in what we're calling phase one at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And each phase will be sort of like this. It's an opportunity for everyone to throw every idea, no matter how crazy. Every idea is open and fair game. You throw it all at the wall and see what sticks. Most of it will just fall and say, you know, okay, well, there may be, if we come up with an idea for 20 tags, there may be five that actually feel like they're useful enough and have enough interest in them to kind of stick around where people want to talk about them.
Mm-hmm. Or implementations, which is also.
Yeah. And of those five, maybe you have two or three that are clear winners, that people are like, okay, I have a need for this, or have a strong desire for this thing to happen, and I think I can bake it into my app, or I think I want to put it into my platform.
Mm-hmm.
And of those three, maybe all three of them end up being sort of hashed out and get to a point where you feel, where everybody feels comfortable about them. Maybe that's only one. Some phases we go through, there may not be any.
Mm-hmm.
So, like we've got three that are formalized right now, and that the story behind the formalization of those things are the lock tag is a dead simple tag. It's dead simple. It's crazy easy to implement, and it just does what it says on the box.
And let's just pause there for 1 second. The lock tag, which is now being implemented by multiple hosters. Yep. I think I call that a success already, just to have, you know, 500,000 feeds that I know some of our hosting companies are implementing. That is going to be useful for someone somewhere. It would be nice to get some recognition from Anchor that they got it. It's like, okay, that's all they need to say, really. Remember, we're doing it for you, Anchor guys.
Yeah.
We're doing it for you, not for us. We're doing it for you. Make your life easy. That would be really nice to have, but I was delighted. Now, I think there was some chatter here and there. You know, there's obviously, this could be used nefariously, I guess, but it's the honor system. And I think you even said, at least you have a starting point. Hey, I have this tag. Yeah. It says locked, and somehow it's showing up over there. So what's going on? It's that simple. I really like that.
It's only a few, I mean, it's only what, 40, 50 characters. Bytes in an RSS feed. It's very low friction, low entry point problem, you know, to solve. And so that one was just sort of, it was out there, and Buzzsprout's using it, Fireside's using it, Blueberry's about to use it as well.
Cool.
So I mean, just that's like you said. I mean, that's 500,000 feeds right there.
Yeah, that's that's a great implementation. Perfect.
So and then the other. Ones are the transcript tag and the funding tag. The transcript tag, we baked that really quickly because it was already in use. Buzzsprout was already using that tag in almost its exact form as it stands now. And Podcast Addict, the hugely popular Android player, was supporting that format.
Mm.
And so when you see something out there, when you see a host that has 300,000 podcasts and one of the most successful podcast apps in the market is directly supporting that, when they have an agreement that's working already with a spec that is very easy to implement, you don't change that.
No, it's perfect.
You just formalize it and move on with your business. So that's why that one got
on
baked
in. On the transcript tag, mm-hmm. As a podcaster, where are the tools for me to, I mean, ideally, I'd like to upload my, no, not even, ideally, I'd like to drop my final MP3 product somewhere, and then it comes back after X amount of time with a transcript.
Yeah.
I don't mind paying for it, but where is, I mean, we had a producer doing this for us, and we kept getting, I think he was doing it through YouTube, maybe? And or maybe it was Amazon, but we kept getting borked on stuff, and then it would come across a word that it didn't want to transcribe, and it would kill the process. Is there a definitive place where you can do that, and it's reasonable in price that gives you a machine generated transcript?
Well, Buzzsprout has been the leader on this front in the podcasting world, and since they baked this, they created this tag and everything, and I think they have a pretty strong affinity for a service called otter.ai.
Otter.ai.
Yeah. And so, but what I would, there's a little bit of the specs are there, they're defined. And I'm not sure how much of the tooling required for it is still within Buzzsprout. So what I would like, and I've actually communicated with Tom a little bit on this, is for there to be, I'm exploring this too, because like after we finish this episode, I want to bake the transcript for it and stick it right into the tags. But we have to figure out, because I can use AWS, they have a transcription service and it's not expensive. So I can run it through there, but then I get a JSON output that does not fit the format that Buzzsprout had designed. So I need tooling to help me do that. And I think Tom is working on He's going to either open source that or he's going to make that available in some way. I hope I'm not misquoting him. But we're kind of figuring out how this thing is going to work right now. And we'll definitely have our feed as, you know, the guinea pig sandbox feed for that. But I think the tooling is there. It's just a matter of getting good scripts into people and possibly a web service where they can just, where you can, the flow would be something like you run it through otter.ai or AWS or whatever your transcription service is. You mm-hmm. get a JSON dump out of it, and then you just import that thing into your host, and they flip out the correct format. And for somebody like us, maybe we run it through a script, and it does the translation into the proper format. But there's the problem with a lot of these transcription services is they themselves use their own format.
Right.
And so there's no standardization there, and transcription is not free. It does cost money. So the sort of workflow step of getting your audio file run through a decent transcription service, which requires, you know, some machine learning and that kind of thing, and then getting the output and then converting it into sort of a standardized non-proprietary format, that workflow is not seamless right now.
Right.
And I'm hoping that a good workflow will spawn out of this whole thing. You know, because it's really, somebody could write a Python script that would convert AWS transcript format to the podcast namespace format. I mean, they could probably write that in, you know, a couple hours. It's all there. It's just new. So
tools, yeah. Baby, tools. We need a tools page.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, we got great Python guys. You know, I'm sure they could do that.
Which we got, sleep, yeah. Yes, please. And we do need a page on podcastindex.org. We still need that shows everyone who's integrated, what they're doing, links, etc.
We got to get dressed. See, we're gonna have to put Drunk Plato on the payroll because we need so much web stuff.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, I don't know if he's busy or not. I don't want to infringe on anybody. I don't want to guilt. I don't want to guilt him into it.
I know. It's like because Buzzsprout, they're gonna start auto submitting to us once. But what they really want is for us to have a page for each podcast, you know, where you click on the podcast and it just gives you the, you know, here's the episodes, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's a great idea. But I got no idea how to use all the React Webpack stuff.
Oh, right, right, right. So what exactly is the request for? The page shows what?
So, I mean, it's like we're a directory. Yeah. So it's basically where you click, you can search for a podcast, click on it, and then you see a podcast info page about that show.
Ah, okay. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. You got, you know, your album art, your episodes, all that stuff, categories, basically with a link where somebody can go and look at their show on our system and see what we know about them and that kind of thing.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. It's not hard stuff, but
the stuff we use for our page is React. I'm not familiar with React.
Yeah, it's using React and Webpack and Node.js. It's a Node.js app, and so it's just like Drunk Plato wrote it all and then put it in, and I was just like, okay, you know, I did it, started it running, and I broke it open the other day to kind of look at it, and I was like, oh my god, I got no idea what I'm looking at. Because I'm a PHP stack guy, so I was like, holy crap, this is not, it's using what do they call that? TSX files, like TypeScript files and that kind of thing. It's just not something
I'm used to. Oh, it makes it all look pretty. I guess my HTML CSS days are over, huh?
The world's kind of moved on a little bit. It's left us behind.
I still use the Blink tag now and then.
Marquee, use a Marquee tag.
Yeah, exactly.
That's transcripts. I'm hoping some more clarity will come around this. And I'm positive of that, about the formatting. But then the third tag was funding. There's been a little bit of confusion about this too, because it's like, well, there's already, you know, there's already this tag out there, and there's this tag out there, and there's this tag, you know. And people are, well, you know, there's prior art here. And I understand that. The prior art stuff is important. But it's also important to remember that tags, like, there are so many different namespaces out there currently, and they all, the ones that support some sort of donation funding type scenario, do it. They're either weird or, I'm trying to figure out the right way to say this, or they're very complicated. So basically, one of the things, what makes the whole namespace, let me just stop for a second and try to reframe this.
Okay. 'Cause
one of the things that makes this namespace a little maybe hard to follow for people just coming into it or looking on the outside is that there are definitely competing ideas going on here. And I mean, not competing between the people. I just mean competing sort of
conceptually.
Goals.
Conceptually.
Yes. Okay. So one of the ideas is that we want to ultimately end up with a single namespace that can someone, let's just imagine 10 years from now. Okay. Just throwing a number out there.
Mm-hmm.
Want to end up with a single namespace definition called podcast that someone can drop into their feed, and it just encompasses all the things that are now spread across 5, 6, 7, 8 different namespaces.
Mm.
Some of them proprietary, some of them not. That is one goal, and it's a good goal to have, but it's not the goal that we're necessarily focusing on right now, because there's another goal, and that goal is to solve some real problems and some real pent up need that the podcast community has right this second.
Mm-hmm.
So if you talk about something like, I don't know, new feed URL, it's a tag that exists in iTunes. It's a tag that we may put in. I don't know how even useful it is anymore. Maybe that's a bad example. Okay. Duration. That's a better one.
Okay.
iTunes colon duration. That's a tag that exists in iTunes. People use it. It's supposed to just contain the length in time of the podcast, like hours, minutes, seconds. Conceptually, based on goal, the first goal I talked about, we should end up with a duration tag in the podcast namespace at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just not critically important right now. There's no indication that Apple is going to close off anything, or it's just not a high priority. So yes, there will be tag duplication as we go, but the tag duplication stuff is going to, each discussion about which ones those are is going to be a conversation all on its own, and it'll happen slowly over time. Now, why is funding sort of different? Why are we just like dropping a funding tag in there when there's already existing stuff? It's not as simple as something like iTunes duration. Funding is such a critical part of what podcasting is doing right now that it felt right to bring the other things that were happening with these different, like Adam Link, Rel Equals Payment, the Radio Public stuff, it felt right to just simplify this and say,
just to call, okay, you mean by just saying funding to, yes, start it, because it's all about the word ultimately. That's what people argue about the most, it seems.
Yeah, that's a good aspect of this is that if you just have a clear, like Link, Rel Equal Payment as just one version of possibly 10 links in the Atom namespace. I mean, yes, it's out there in the wild. It's being picked up by podcast players, but podcast players can easily, very simply, just add another look for the funding tag. It's not a hard thing to do. And if it can solve sort of some fragmentation issues right now, then that's a good thing. And if it's not a required tag, so people are always free to disregard it, so it doesn't even have to be implemented. But again, it was a dead simple thing to do. It defines a link and then a slogan. Hey, please, help us out. That's all it does. So those are the three tags that we formalized and why they were formalized at this point. Now, the other sort of source of confusion, and you can stop me at any point. I'm just going to rattle on forever.
No, you keep going. I'm soaking it up.
All right. So the other point of confusion came around the idea that this thing is going to close on November 15th.
I see. But it's just round one, correct?
Yeah. And to be very clear, that does not, first of all, that there is an absolutely no way that means that we're going to fully bake a namespace with 100 tags in it and deliver it to the world in 30 days. I mean, it's impossible. There's no way. Nobody's expecting that to happen. The phase one sort of multi-phase approach is, you throw everything you got out there. Everybody's free to have their ideas and submit their tags and all this kind of stuff. We bash them out. At some point within a month, it becomes very clear very quickly which ones have traction and which ones don't. You toss the other ones over into a future phase.
Ah, I see.
Or if they get, or you just drop them all together.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're left with a few. You hash out those, bang on them a little bit. And at some point within, that 30 days, it becomes also clear which ones are going to be very complicated.
So the people who are feed creators, i.e. the hosters mainly, they will be picking and choosing along the way what works for them, because that's kind of what I'm seeing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Is there a risk then that one gets tossed out later that they may have implemented, or once it's implemented, it's always in for good?
No, once it's implemented, it's there.
Okay.
And that's one of the things, like, there's not a danger in this system of baking a tag and then being like, oh my God, we screwed that up. We got to fix it.
Right.
That is not a big danger here, because what happens is as we close out in this scenario, as we close out phase one, we will look at all the tags that are left, of which there's not many. Most of them have already been pushed to phase two.
Right.
We will look at what's left, and I think there's two or three that are left. Contact, person, maybe, and I can't remember the end chapters. So we'll look at those and we'll say on, 11/15, we'll say, okay, we're not doing any more open submission discussion type stuff about new things. And we'll just look at what we got and say, okay, here's what's left. Do these qualify as something that could possibly be finished enough to go into, to be finalized? If not, we push everything to phase two and then we just start the process over. You're always having sort of these cycles of throw it at the wall, see what sticks, discussion, refinement, then evaluation as things are winding down for that phase. And then you look at it again and say, okay, where are we at? Do we feel any sort of confidence in these tags?
Mm-hmm.
And then if the answer is no, you just boot it and move on to the next phase. So the hard date is not for delivery.
Okay. So
So
I can tell people who keep saying Dave's a Nazi, I can tell them to calm down. Is that,
well, I might be, I mean, I don't know. They don't know me. I could be, it's possible.
No, I like that process. I think that's the right way to go.
Yeah, it allows you to, I think this allows us to move very quickly on the things that are obvious.
Yeah.
But have plenty of time, effectively forever, to deliberate the things that are hard.
Before we continue, I'd like to step back to funding platform equals PayPal URL. And there's a long one. I'm not going to read to you. This entire project is value for value. That's our philosophy. You get out of it what you put into it, and you should only put into it based upon the value that you got out of it. And that includes everything that you see at podcastindex.org. The initial funding came from our own pockets. Very quickly, the uptake was beautiful. People have been supporting this through the red donate button, which, as we know, is the way to go. It is the wave of the future, the red donate button. And people continue to support the index, continue to support the work. And it's very important that we thank them right now for their contributions to podcasting 2.0.
Let's see. Do you have, I'm trying to find an email from Jason DeFilippo or DeFilippo. Do you have anything on
that? Let me see.
I got a letter from him. I don't have his initial donation thing. I'll start reading it. See if you can find it.
What I have from him is saying that he donated and he got a 404 on the thank you page. Let me see.
Yeah, we fixed that.
Yes. Let me see here. I don't have, I can see if there's any other.
I can't find his donation amount.
His amount, a $20 recurring donation.
Oh, $20. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yes, so he's got a server. He's got a server.
He does. we're running out of servers, by the way. We're gonna have to start giving out API calls or something.
Okay. Hey, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Let's see. He says, a small request. If you do shout outs for donations on the next episode, can you just refer to me as Jason from the Grumpy Old Geeks podcast?
Ah, there you go. Of course.
Much easier than trying to pronounce my last name, as he said. And then, obviously, yeah. I butchered it. He said, ask my host, Art19, when they're going to be implementing the new tags. So hopefully they'll have a plan to get up to speed soon.
And that is how all of this is always driven. You know, we're not all sitting in a bubble. People who listen, talk to your podcaster who does your favorite show. Talk to find the link for the developer who's created the app that you're using, even if it's Apple. Talk to your hosting company. Tell people about what's going on. We have no marketing budget. This is it. You're hearing the marketing budget right now. I have to perform all kinds of favors with my wife to get the marketing opinion. Like, I've been washing a lot of dishes.
She's the vice president of marketing in the Curry household.
Yes. Oh, yes. She's a professional. Red donate button. That marketing is going to be... It's always been important. It is the only way these things really get driven is by people saying, hey, I'm using you as a hosting platform. I'd like to have this capability. Can you guys look into that? And please realize, it's not easy. Everything takes time. Everything takes money. It takes actual people doing stuff. Use according etiquette when requesting features.
Yeah. Don't say, hey, what are you waiting on? This is bullshit.
Yeah. That's a surefire way to have it delayed.
Yeah. Martin from PodFriend, he gave us a $50 recurring donation.
Oh, my goodness.
I was playing with PodFriender last night, and that thing just cracks me up. It was awesome.
I love using that as an example. But also, Rolfie's... why can I never remember the name of the cast?
Cast coverage.
Cast coverage. Gosh, it's a mental block. His cast coverage has really gotten good, too. It's got a lot of cool features in there. And I hear users saying, oh, man, I was confused. But then it's like, oh, that makes sense. You're dropping me right in the middle of a podcast. Oh, I kind of get it.
Have you seen Andy's pod browser?
No, I have not. .org? I have not, no.
You should check it out. It's like, I made the reference the other day. I was using it last night. I made the reference the other day that it's like using Unix. Like, it's an old,
I'm looking at it like now.
Do you remember Motif? That old Unix windowing system?
Yeah.
It's like if you turn, it's like if you turned X Windows into a podcast player.
I have seen this actually. Yes. I've actually, I use this I love it when people filter by language because I speak another one.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot of fun to say, okay, I just want to, you know, hear Dutch podcasts or whatever.
Yeah, he gets a lot of good. He gets a lot of good feedback. He's an old school computer science guy. So he's
very nice.
Yeah, he's been.
But back helpful. To Martin and Podfriend.
Yeah, I mean, Podfriend. Martin, thank you for your $50 a month, and you are going to get a server that I just created about a week ago that I don't want to tell you the name of, but you're going to have, I don't want to tell you what its purpose is, but you have that server now.
So. Oh, good. And we can swipe left on that server or swipe right to keep it.
Yeah. 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 Please swipe right.
Thank you so much, Martin. Martin was jumped in both feet early on. He also is in a fun way. He's a cheerleader. He's always stopping for a second and saying, wow, look at all this stuff we're doing. How cool is this? You know, it's like the opposite of everything else in the world right now. People working together. I love it. And I really appreciate, well, the support is very welcome and super appreciated. But all that other stuff, Martin, that you do, your attitude is really important for the whole vibe of everything. Really, really enjoy it. Enjoy having you in the group.
Yeah, he's been a real joy for sure. And he's got some competition now. There's a new PWA out there.
Oh, there is?
Yeah, Pod Install.
Oh, my goodness.
So he's gonna step his game up.
My other job is keeping me so busy. Pod Install. I haven't even seen Pod Install yet.
Yeah, okay. I heard about it on Todd Cochran's podcast. But, cool. Another, let's see, that's, oh, yeah, this. I found my Jason from Node. It was buried in there. Let's see. Okay. Chad. Is that right? Yeah. Chad Farrow. $5 a month. Thank you, Chad. Appreciate that. And I don't have a $5 a month server I can give you. We don't have anything that cheap anymore. Let's see. What? Josh Liston. Or, you know, on No Agenda, it's like, you know, we're not reading anything under under $50, or, you know, and there's all these limits. Our limit for reading on this podcast is
zero.
It's zero.
We won't read it. We won't read your donation if you didn't send one. Yeah.
Yeah. Our bar of entry is just at the very bottom.
But I'd like us all to take one moment and realize we started now where this is episode 8. So really, you know, really 2 full months, you know, we did some pre-work before we started all this. This is a podcast that, and I think the podcast has a lot to do with the donations coming in. It's a good reminder. People remember why they're doing this, what the effect is, what they're working towards. We do not have a big audience. Now, as you know, I don't do stats. I don't look at them. I don't even know how. I'm not interested. I lost interest in that a long time ago. As long as I could pay my rent, that's all I cared about.
Yeah.
We have a very small audience. You could probably look at figure it out. You can look at the cash and get some idea. But it's in the hundreds, I'll bet. Low hundreds if it's 100.
Look at the membership on the Mastodon server. That's probably our
audience. It's about 100. Yeah, about 120, 150.
Yeah.
We are sustaining this entire project through the value for value model. I just want everyone. Now, we're not getting paid. Dave and I are not taking a salary, but no one is, but we're sustaining it.
I finally got reimbursed for for the server hosting for the first time. That was nice.
Yes, and you deserve it. You deserve it.
And my wife enjoyed that. We, you know, it's like oh, there's an extra, you know, $200 and something. We don't, you know, we get in our pocket.
Yeah. Well, not really, but yeah.
Well, true. Yeah. Well, it filled the hole back up that was created from paying it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But so this just realize that how easy it is. It's really not that hard. So any podcast, I am a firm believer, if you have a podcast and it's for an audience that is interested, really interested or invested in what you're talking about, they will support it.
Yeah.
They will
support it. That was a really great part of the Buzzcast stuff that you did, like where they're asking you about how to apply, what your advice was for other podcasters. Because I don't think you get the chance to just give raw advice like that to podcasters.
And I said I'd love to come back and do another episode with them someday where I just explain the ask. And you know, Tina, my wife, communications professional all of her career, she says the number one reason why people don't give to a cause, and they will tell you themselves, is because they say, I wasn't asked.
Yeah.
I wasn't asked. And it's hard sometimes because it's not the typical model of media. It's not, it feels dirty. Like, mm-hmm. I'm begging for money. People will say, are you begging for money? No, I'm asking for value for value.
Yeah.
And it's
not begging for money because you've already given the value.
Right. The value is there. You've received the value. Did you like, and again, the value is in the eye of the beholder. Whatever it's worth, and value is different for everybody. $5 can be a lot for a lot of people. $500 to some is nothing, but it's still value, and you associate your own value. And that's a concept that once you have that in your head and you can explain it to your audience, it will work. I've proven it over and over again. I started a brand new show with Mo a year and a half ago. Already, that is making a big difference in his life.
Yeah, I think people don't understand how they look at something. I think with No Agenda, they looked at some at what you were doing. They're like, okay, well, that was unique. That was a one-off. But then you do it again with MoFax. Well, then it gets a little bit harder to say, well, it doesn't work. And then it's like, well, we're doing it with this. Well, this is conceptually nothing even close to your other two shows. And it's now, you know, sustaining.
Yes.
So if the more this happens, I mean, you can't ignore the fact that this works. So
it works. By the way, I'm looking at this pod install. Uh-huh. That's pretty cool.
I haven't even looked at it. I just heard about it. And by the way, Acorn, they did make the ARM chip.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was on my screen. See, pod install.
Excellent.
I don't know where it is.
Excellent.
Well, let me go to Josh Liston. He says, g'day, g'day, Adam and Dave. Loving what you guys are building here, and I want to support you guys monthly. But given the Australian dollar reduced sucky suckiness at the moment against the US dollar, I had to start with $10 a month. And so he gave us $10 a month.
Which, and I really appreciate it because that is literally $15.
Is it?
The Australian dollar is that's why No Agenda, you know, people, you know, we have a cutoff, $200 as an associate executive producer. Mm-hmm. We said if any country that uses the dollar, we'll just do it one for one, because in order to do $200, you have to do like $260 or $280 Australian dollars.
Holy cow.
Same for New Zealand, same for Scandinavia. Yeah, it's bad. It's real bad.
Man, that sucks. Well, I'm going to give Josh then. I'm going to give him one of the aggregators.
Nice.
That is $10 a month.
Nice. Thank you.
Thank you, Josh. See, let me make sure I don't have a note from him. Okay. We'll do a one-time payment from Rick. I don't think I have a last name. I'm just going to say Rick, because I'm not sure if he wants me to say his last name. A $50 single one-time donation from Rick. Thank you so much, Rick.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate that.
And the last donation we had was a $25 a month subscription from Mike Clark. And it says, hey, Dave, please credit me as Mike Clark. I made this donation for two reasons. I believe what you and Adam are doing is transformational. And like Adam, I'm an ideas guy, and I want to support guys like y'all that bring new ideas to life.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mark.
And whatever ideas you have, man, bring it over to podcastindex.social. Yeah. Spew the ideas. Spew them.
That's our folks for this week.
Well, thank you for the financial sponsorship and help. The value for value model works on time, talent, and treasure. Doesn't matter if you support how you support it. And a lot of people do all three.
Yeah.
And all of it is valuable to the mission and valuable to the project and highly, highly appreciated. Really, really. Thank you so much. That's, and if you want to support everything we're doing. Podcastindex.org. Look for the red donate button.
The big red donate button.
Exactly.
Do we want to talk about some Spotify clips?
Oh yeah, sure. What you got? Are these people we're losing who eventually will come back? Is that what we have today? Do we have another?
No, we don't have any. We don't have the. Although you can play. I sent you some old Brené Brown ISOs that I found that I forgot for one of the episodes. You, just dealer's choice.
Okay.
Oh, I love it.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's one of them.
Oh, that's a good one.
Exactly.
Ooh, both of these are good.
That's some good ones.
I like this a lot.
Oh my God.
I think I left them out originally because they sounded so dirty.
They do sound dirty, and that's
exactly.
Exactly.
Is that the right spot? Wait,
is this the stuff you get on Spotify these days? And I'm listening. I
love it.
I'm using the wrong app.
You didn't make the switch.
No. It's tempting. It's tempting.
Play clip. Let's just see. Play clip one.
And to your point, certainly we've invested aggressively in content and exclusives. The creator side of this landscape has changed in a direction that we wanted to change.
Ah, this is the Spotify guy. There's a whole interview with him. What's his name?
Gustav?
I think it's Gustav. Yeah, hold on. Now that I have the context, let me listen to this again, what he was saying.
And to your point, certainly we've invested aggressively in content and exclusives. The creator side of this landscape has changed in a direction that we wanted to change.
Okay. In what direction has it changed, the creator side?
Yeah, I mean, like, I just thought that was an interesting thing that he said. It gives a little bit of insight into, he said at the very end, that the creator side of this thing, by bringing exclusives into their catalog, mm-hmm. you know, they are changing the landscape. And he says at the end, in a way that we want it to change. Like, they are in.
Oh, good catch.
It stood out to me because it's clearly you can say, well, obviously it's intentional, but like it's intentional that they want to change the ecosystem.
He's doing corporate speak. That's okay. Let me listen again to what he said there.
And to your point, certainly we've invested aggressively in content and exclusives. The creator side of this landscape has changed in a direction that we wanted to change.
Oh, Can I just stop for a second? I have experience with this. I started arguably one of the first, if not the first, podcast network, which is not that different from Spotify. You know, what you're doing is you have a stable and you are helping them with advertising. In the very beginning, even just talking about this, and just to show you how things have changed, the first thing that happened was, you're going to steal our content. You're going to hijack our feeds. You're going to do this. You're going to lock us in. Blah, blah, blah. There's entire shows of people hating on me for sending a contract. Wow. Sending a contract. Keith and the girl, who under false pretenses, they said, oh, and we're interested. We sent them a contract. Then they ragged on it and said I was trying to steal them and make them slaves.
Holy cow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And to this day, they still rag about that. The problem we had is that the content was either not brand safe for real advertising. I talked with the Buzzsprout guys about this. I mean, real advertising, Procter and Gamble, General Motors, Pfizer, Procter and Gamble, Verizon, real advertising, not Tommy John and Squarespace. You can live on that.
Not Casper Mattress.
No, you can live on that. And there's a market for it, but they come and go. It's very cyclical for those companies, and it's not really big advertising where you can also get the high CPM rates or the high cost per thousand. And what happens in the group is people get angry, mad, disappointed, etc., when they are excluded from deals. And everyone knows what deals are coming down. They hear the ads on other shows. I'm like, well, how come not in that? Well, the advertiser didn't want you. There's a whole myriad of reasons. And that's why I believe the role of podcaster relations was created, which is this thankless job of basically running between the advertising side of the house and the content creation side, making everybody happy.
And is that what Rob over at Lipson, is he?
I think so.
Podcaster relations?
Okay. Yes, I think maybe at Podcast One and maybe some other places.
Okay.
That's exactly what it is. And it's a very thankless job because you never win. You can't win with everybody. And people get upset and they don't understand. And advertising is a finicky business. And again, advertising is censorship.
Yeah.
If your content doesn't fit, you're just not going to get it. So you're going to start fitting your content to the advertising if you want to have it. It's a natural process. So I had a very, it was incredibly educational. It was not a great experience. I did not love going to work every single day. It was painful and it was confusing. And you wind up just with no one's really happy. No one's really happy except a few shows that will pretty much have everything.
That you get the haves and the have-nots.
Totally. Totally.
That kind of goes into that, leads real well into clip two, if you want to go ahead and play that.
One of the major inflection points in podcasting, interestingly, came through Spotify because of the streaming, and that brought in kind of a new generation of users.
Because of the streaming, it brought in a new generation of users.
So what they want here, and we'll talk about this in a second, you know, and this is not some discovery. I mean, this is just obvious to a lot of people, is what they want is to remove this whole decentralized model of RSS. That would be wonderful. And then silo everything into a streaming app, because they control, then you don't have all of the difficulties up and down the chain. You have a complete.
Yeah, you have control over everything, over the every bit that travels.
Yeah, you have a complete silo. Excuse me, not silo, but stack, straight from the user who's listening all the way back up to every link in the chain.
Right.
And that user is logged in, and that's critical. The user is logged in to that streaming app, and they call in this. There was a ton of clips I could have taken out of this. I had to use restraint, but one of the things they talk a lot about is they call them super apps. Ooh, and
oh boy.
Like, yeah, yeah. And one of the super apps they refer to is like, there are a lot of Chinese apps. Like, was it WeChat? Isn't that like it's an app that lets you do a whole bunch of different things in it.
Yeah.
And so their idea of the super app, and you know, you got a logged in user. So you now can concretely identify that user and track their behavior up and down the chain with all these signals and all this kind of jazz.
So why do they call that a new generation of user? Why don't they just call it a new generation of victim?
Well, so then Todd over at Blueberry, he was talking on some show. I can't remember which one it was, but he was talking about how his users his user listenership counts, I guess, the numbers of people listening, didn't change when he went from just streaming, excuse me, from just pure RSS to Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the unknown factor here is the user count may not have changed, but the type of user may have changed. And that's something that he's not going to know for maybe a while. And so, let's just say this falls into the category. I don't know how deep I want to go with this, but this falls into the whole category of knowing of, if you just know a result, how do you know what happened to give you that result? And this is expressed in a lot of different ways.
Right. Well, and that is the core of the advertising business, is knowing how the result is created so that you can go and create it.
Yeah.
And having all that data.
If Todd lost, let's just say what he's saying is effectively, okay, well, I had, let's just say 10,000 listeners before Spotify, and now I have roughly 10,000 listeners still. But maybe 3,000 of those listeners decided to stop listening to him, and he picked up 3,000 new ones on the Spotify platform. And so all he's got is raw count. Well, these new listeners, maybe the old listeners, would have responded to a Casper mattress mid-roll,
mm-hmm.
and maybe the new ones won't. And all I'm saying is, like, the type of user is being the user is being tightly controlled in the Spotify environment.
Yeah, and yes, I agree with your conclusion. The new generation of users means it's a new generation of people we have control over. It's a new way of controlling the experience, knowing what's going on, which it's fine.
Yeah.
But that knowledge is not going to Todd. No. That knowledge is going to Spotify.
We'll play clip four.
Oh, hold on a second. Clip four.
What he said was that the medium itself is built to be understood by an algorithm. You're presented with one item at a time. You either consume or you swipe. So it's built for the algorithm to understand what you're paying attention to versus, for example, a scrolling feed where the algorithm has no idea which item your eyes are actually looking at.
Right. Isolating the specific variables so that the product developer knows what is working or not working, essentially, for the user.
Exactly. And if you think about music, actually, it's the exact same thing. You present one audio track at a time. You either listen to it or you skip. So in that sense, you can say it's a similar sort of UI, but in audio.
The tricky part is actually just the length of the song versus the length of the TikTok video, because you get to a very quick decision if you like that TikTok video or not, literally within like 2-3 seconds. For a song, as many of you know, like the first couple seconds of a song doesn't sound anything like the chorus or the ending. So you just have to go further into the song before you really gauge if someone truly likes it or not. But to me, that's the only difference.
Yeah, in TikTok, you have more evaluations per minute because there are shorter clips, but it's also more direct. But it is interesting that you mentioned this, because this is what is happening in the label industry. It is super clear that the intro matters more and more. So you do have the TikTok effect in music. You know, songs used to start slow, they don't anymore because people skip within the first 10 seconds.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, they can be all high and mighty, but we all know the porn guys are the ones that built those algorithms first. Don't pretend like you invented the wheel here.
Your number of evaluations per minute on porn are probably pretty high as well.
I heard a lot of talk around podcast movement about programmatic ads, which is exactly what this is. It's figuring out who you are, what you want. We're going to give that to you. We're going to interrupt your enjoyment for this and give something to you. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But yeah.
Well, they were talking about TikTok there and how they a big discussion point here was trying to capture some of that. I mean, he used the words, the phrase that TikTok is built for the algorithm.
Yeah.
And you can see that. I mean, you can see that.
That's definitely. For sure.
Every little thing you do on that app is being sent back as a signal to the TikTok.
It's so interesting because now you see what's exposed is everyone's independent agenda. Spotify's agenda is not to make people listen to Todd's podcast all the time. That's their agenda, is to keep you sticking and listening to whatever they can get you to listen to on their platform. It has nothing to, they are not really promoting you. They are, in fact, they're more than anything promoting away from you.
Yeah. It's just like, it's just like YouTube, and they changed their engagement algorithm from, you know, was it from like not recommended, but from number of watches to how long you stayed on the platform.
Yes. Yeah.
It's the same deal. I mean, everybody wants full they want to maximize engagement on their platform, not on your podcast.
Right. But it will only be a matter of time before they start prompting you while you're listening or watching something into clicking on something else.
Well, play clip five.
Oh, boy. Am I from the future again?
Yeah.
So one of the benefits of being a streaming service is that we understand the consumption situation. We understand if you're listening on a speaker, but putting on an Apple Watch or a phone. We understand if you're in your car, for example, because the phone is connected and so forth. So we actually think that's a very important signal. And we try to think of them as kind of different jobs to be done. And what we want to try to understand is the situation that you're in. And it's obviously a combination of your play history, your time, and your taste, but the device is actually a really good signal.
So this is something that came up that we talked about a little bit. I think it was Daniel J. Lewis proposed a tag for like a type of analytics where you could, you know, like ping back.
Yeah.
It's where you can follow. And then I'm not sure what his name is, but the developer of Podcast Addict, he piped in and he just said, I'm not doing that.
Right. And, he doesn't want to track his users.
Right.
Right.
And then there was some discussion. Well, it's, you know, this would be anonymized and everything. And he piped back in and said, sorry, it's just a non-starter. I'm not doing it. And, you know, it was a perfect example of the beauty of what we currently have. But what we currently have is a decentralized system of tens of thousands of servers serving audio and feeds. And then the next layer is the aggregators. And then the next layer is the app. And then the final layer is the user. So you have the creation of the content, the hosting of the content, the aggregation of the content, the playing of it, and then the hearing of it. And the critical piece in that chain is the app.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The app is a firewall between the creator and the listener. And now, most people in the ad industry or in the media industry in general are always trying to find a way to get rid of the firewall because they want the direct access to know everything about what you're doing.
Right.
But the ecosystem that has developed in RSS, in podcasting, there is a natural firewall where somebody like David Norman for Hypercatcher, he can say, no, I'm not this thing that you want. I'm not doing it. And everybody that's his customer gets protected from that thing that the creator or the hosting company or anybody farther up in the chain wanted. What Spotify is trying to do is get rid of all that. They don't want a firewall. They want a direct pipeline from you to them.
Yeah.
With no possibility for anybody to get in between and disrupt that chain.
There's your streaming.
Yeah.
Yep. There it is.
That's what that's about. That is about chain. And that's why I think it goes back to where he said, we changed this in a way that we wanted it to change. Because they want to get rid of this ecosystem, because this ecosystem allows
for since they're cutting shows off. Yes, I'd say that is exactly what they want.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important that developers see themselves in that position. App developers need to see themselves realistically. They need to think of themselves as firewalls between the creation and the consumption.
I think it's marketable. I think it's a marketable thing. Here's what we don't do.
Straight up.
Here's how you're safe. Now, we have an election in the United States coming up in 11 days or 10 days, which brings tremendous opportunity to do stuff under the radar without a lot of noise. It certainly is not an opportunity to launch things or market anything else. People are very consumed with it. It seems important for many other countries around the world. It's been although I believe that when we all are able to dust ourselves off and look back at the past year, we'll see tremendous creativity that has taken place. Great ideas that have been brewed upon. It's art. It's all art. Code is art. You know, in my philosophy. Yeah. So we're going to see a lot of fantastic art, and in the next couple of weeks, we will be starting to implement some of our ideas. And with small groups, we just want to test some stuff out. But I do want to pre-tease and say that we have a monetary system that we think will work and will be fair and will be closed enough, but yet open enough for everybody to participate in, and that everybody can participate in the value flow, which is pretty much what we promised early on. I want to keep the focus on all the other stuff that we're doing, because that's so critically important, and what we've come up with may fail. It may not work at all. But digital money, and I'll just focus on that. When we started this, we had our two missions: preserve podcasting as a platform for free speech. That's mainly what you did. Is, you know, you built the whole system, of course, with everybody who's participated.
Yeah.
Retooling platform podcasting as a platform of value is what I started on from day one. And, you know, we've kept each other obviously very updated and synchronized.
Yeah.
When you get your head, when you wrap your head around digital money, your whole universe changes. I'll just give you one example that I was reading somewhere today. The idea of fungible money. So if I have a quarter in my hand and you got a quarter in your hand and we bump into each other on the street and we drop our quarters and I by accident pick up yours and you pick up mine, no one knows. It doesn't make any difference whatsoever. In the digital world, that digital quarter is yours. It's your asset. And you have control over that, and you can exchange them with somebody, but it offers so many more opportunities to think about how money works and how it flows. It is mind-boggling, and it's taken me, it took me at least 6 weeks just to wrap my head around it. And it doesn't matter what you're talking about here, just purely digital money, and it's coming. It is coming to our world. It's known as the CBDC. Which is the central bank digital coins. The digital euro is being discussed. And at high level, Fifi Lagarde over there, Christine, at the European Central Bank, we've had, there's numerous conversations about FedNow, which would be a direct connection, a digital dollar that can be issued to citizens directly from the Federal Reserve. So this is going to change our world. And I think we've seen this coming at the right moment. We had a big announcement from PayPal with Bitcoin, which I think is a red herring, personally. But it's showing you that digital money is... In fact, I think that PayPal, if I read the press release correctly, is really setting themselves up to implement multiple digital currencies from the central banks. They even talk about central banks in their press release. And they may just be using Bitcoin as a temporary transport mechanism to show that it's possible and it will work. But we will be playing in this arena. And that's what I've been researching. And we've found lots of people who are very smart, and there's technologies out there, and there's code, and there's stuff that we can implement, and it is coming. So I just wanted to put that out there. Do you want to add anything to that?
I think the only thing that I would add is that I think the only it does work. We know it works. We've already tested it. It's just a matter of, I think with a lot of these things, and I think you personally have run into this in the past with probably multiple projects, because you have this knack of seeing things way in the future.
Yeah.
Of seeing things way in advance.
10 years is usually my, I'm on a 10-year schedule.
I think really this, whether or not this fails or succeeds, it's not whether or not it can be done, because we've already proven that, but it's a matter of how is it too far ahead of its time?
Right, exactly. It's the adoption. Yeah. So podcasting was way ahead of its time. There's many things it's not that hard to come up with, to see the future. I think anyone who has some technical inclination can see it, but it's what's really feasible and what works at scale and what works in really people's mindsets, and that's what's coming. We've moved people over to Venmo and Zelle and Cash App and that concept of splitting a bill at the table. All of this is training wheels. Training wheels. What's coming? Mm-hmm. And who is going to hold your keys? No matter what digital asset you have, that's an education process, which people will or won't understand. But I have a feeling that, instead of the typical Adam Curry 10 years ahead of the curve, we are 2 years out, if not maybe right on the money. And it really goes against every single model we've ever looked at.
Yeah. And I think if people are hearing this and they're doing some thing where they're going to, create a stable coin or whatever. It's nothing like that.
No.
Everything that we've
beginning. This whole thing has just been one big white paper for an ICO.
It's not anything. And everything. What's taken so hard? One of the reasons it's taken so long to sort of get off the conceptual idea and actually make you get something that works is that we've been trying to. We've from the beginning. It's like, we want to try to implement this, but we want to make sure that whatever we design, anybody else can just forklift that thing and drop it on their own system and do the exact same thing. We want to make sure that it is completely open to where nothing has to run through us if nobody wants to.
And what we've seen and what we've experimented with, I believe most, if not all, the code is already available to implement it. And, and there's a big role here for everybody. We've been very clear that the podcast app developers, that's why I bring it up now, who are this firewall, they're going to play in this game and they're going to be extremely important, but there's also a huge role for the hosting companies.
Yeah.
And obviously podcasters benefit. I think it's a sellable concept. And I think, you know, as with everything, adoption will be driven by the listeners talking to their podcasters saying, hey, you should look at this, podcasters educating their audience on how to use it. And developers learning.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, and developers. Oh, the curve for developers. It's like, you know, it's nuts. I mean, just everything seems backward and upside down. And then, and then you kind of get like, oh, and you start to realize that, true digital money, where you are the owner of your money, real owner of your money, it's a mind bender, man.
Yeah. And like you've said from the beginning that the sort of phase two of, you know, making the value flow work for everybody, that term everybody, that it really does mean everybody.
Exactly.
There's no winners and losers. It's really and truly everybody in that chain, from creator to listener, gets a piece of that action.
Oh, there's no winning. We don't like to foster a competitive atmosphere, but we laugh a lot. Now everyone hug and share a secret.
There you go. That's podcasting 2.0.
Podcasts are cool.
Oh man.
Oh, I think we got anything else? I'm done. I got stuff, but I think we can kick that off.
I think we're good. So, what are we doing for the? Well, first of all, are you going to take off this weekend, man? Are you going to chill for a couple of days? Because you seem like you're always up and doing stuff.
No promises. I got nervous energy, man. All over it.
Very good.
Got to get it out.
Is there anything that you need? Is there anything we can get you?
Candy, like candy bars, lots of sugary caffeine drinks. I need energy boost.
More sugar for Dave.
Yes.
All right.
Carbs.
McCarbs. Sugar and carbs. That's what we run on here. Dave, thanks, man. Have a great weekend.
Yeah. See you later, bro.
See you soon, everybody.